Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste. And those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. Tonight's show is Land is the Basis for Independence, Preserving Our Legacy. We have a dynamite show for you tonight. In addition to being concentrated on land and preserving our legacy, it's a unique show, and that is going to be ran by all sisters. Sisters on the East and sisters on the West. Also, let me give you a heads up. We are operating on battery power, backup energy here from Brownwood, Georgia. We have a power outage here, and we're operating on battery-powered cell and battery-powered computer. And allow willing, we can make it through the hour. But if we drop off, you'll know why. So I'm not going to delay. I'm going to pass the mic to Sister Majida, who's going to host the show for tonight. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Majida.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you, Brother Carlton. Can everyone hear me?
What are we going to do, Sister Majida? I'm going to open the mic. Sister, one of our guests, Dr. Gail Myers, if you can press the one on your dial. Okay, so she pressed the one, so that means she can hear us.
Okay, great. Thank you, Brother Carlton. We're going to go ahead and get started. As my husband said, you know, we have an awesome show planned tonight. We have three awesome guests on our panel tonight, and I'm going to go ahead and introduce all three, and then we're going to go ahead and get started. So we have first an amazing sister. She's the co-founder of Farms to Grow, Inc., and preparing our next generation of farmers. She's a steadfast advocate with decades of support and service for Black farmers and for motivating our farmers to be connected with our communities. Actually, it's our community to be connected with our hardworking farmers. She's a cultural anthropologist, my friend, Dr. Gail Myers. We also have with us tonight a long time, and we're talking the late 70s, early 80s, community gardener. This sister was gardening. She was gardening in the hood and teaching and training young children with regards to food in the community long before it became a trend. She's an avid seed saver. She's a bloodline banker, and she'll tell you more about what that means and the importance of it. My sister, biologically speaking, Sister Melva X. And last and certainly not least, but the best of what we can do is to bring our youth to the table of discussion. We have a special guest, and I'll let Sister Melva introduce her a little later in the show, and that will be our sister, Sister Shani Mayfield. So as was said, our show is about land, the basis for independence, preserving our legacy as owners, producers, stewards, and cultivating our future generations. So we'll start with you, Dr. Myers. Welcome.
Thank you, Madita. It is always an honor and a great pleasure. I'm always excited to join the show and to share the work that we're doing with your listeners. I just love the work that you and me and Carlton are doing. Of course, you all have been with Farms to Grow from very early stages, from our Gardens to Grow program. Remember Carlton building those planter boxes for us?
Yes, ma'am.
It's been an amazing evolution of the work.
Yes.
But let me just give you a little background of how I got involved in this. I went to Ohio State in 1997 to major in anthropology because I was going to go to Ecuador. I was going to study the Shoda people, which is a group of African, community of Africans that didn't assimilate into the Ecuadorian society, and they maintained their language. And so I was going to be with this team of researchers as part of Morehouse College going over to Ecuador. And they said, yeah, well, you go get the PhD and come on back. At that time, I had a master's. So while I was at OSU, the first week I started conversations with my advisor, the topic of Black farmers came up, and I was embarrassed to say that I didn't know anything about what was going on with Black farmers in 97. Went to the library and found out about the litigation with Pickford versus USDA Glickman, where the class action suit Black farmers were suing the USDA. I was, I don't know, fascinated is the word, but I was intrigued that this is what the state of Black farmers were at that time. So then I started interviewing Black farmers. I said, I need to find out more about, you know, what's really happening. Now, all of this was really taking me farther away from my excursion into Ecuador, but that was okay. So my heart was like, I want to find out what's going on with Black farmers. And as I started doing interviews, I realized that I was not going to Ecuador. I was going to stay right in the U.S., which is very unusual for a cultural anthropologist because what we do is go somewhere and study other people. The fact that that I decided to stay home, if you will, and they call that native anthropology. I don't like the necessary term of that, but that's when an anthropologist studies her own community. At the time, I was very early. I didn't know that. I forgot that I had farmers in my family, but I graduated from Ohio State after talking to farmers for 5 years, and my heart was really broken because I heard so much about the loss of land. I heard stories about how much they struggled to get that land and then only to lose it through all kinds of chicanery and violence. So when I graduated in 2002, and all my colleagues were, interviewing to go teach at universities, et cetera. And they asked me what I was going to do. I said, I don't know, but I got farms to grow. A couple of years later, I ended up moving to California and started having conversations with Black farmers in California. And they began to say the same things that the Black farmers in Ohio and the Black farmers in Alabama and Georgia, who I'd also talked to as part of my work. And I couldn't believe it. I said, how is it that Black farmers in California, one of the most progressive states in the country, are dealing with the same things that black farmers in Ohio, Alabama are dealing with. So we started Farms to Grow in 2004. I said we and my co-founder, Gordon Reed. He's a farmer I met when I was working in Ohio. We continued to have a communication, and we had a conversation one day after I just in just disgust after talking to several black farmers in California about how, you know, how they just weren't getting the kind of support they really needed. I said, we got to do something. So I started Farms to Grow September 2004. At that point, didn't know what to do, but know we needed a platform to do something. And the work evolved. I was fortunate enough to get a opportunity to manage the farmers market in Bayview Hunters Point in 2005. And I started meeting the residents, and little young kids were coming up to the market, mostly young boys, about 8, 9, or 10. And they were coming through walking and sometimes on their bikes, and they would come through and point to the fruit. And they would say, what's that? I said, that's an orange. I mean, I'm not an orange.
Wow.
I said, they would point. I said, what's that? I said, that's a peach. So what's that? I said, that's a nectarine. They had never seen fresh fruit.
Wow.
And it broke my heart. So eventually, collaborating with different efforts with the San Francisco Children's Commission, because we shared a similar mission around nutrition, we collaborated, wrote a grant, and started our Gardens to Grow program. And that's where Mia worked with us. We implemented three gardens, one at Charles Drew, one at Whitney Young after school, and one at Hunters Point Head Start. And we worked with each community for a year. So then we started the Young Chefs program. The principal at Charles Drew pulled me aside one day. She said she wanted to do a program, sort of a kitchen table program with young girls in third grade. So we started we started every January, so from 12 to 1 every Thursday. We worked with the young girls for 3 years and the summers and summer camp. Then I was leaving one day, and this young boy, he was tall for a third grader, and he said very politely, he said, excuse me, but why can't boys be in the cooking program? And I was like, oh, well, you're right. So I went to the principal, told him what the student said, and so for the next 2 years, then we had one third of the girls and one third of the boys. So that really became the understanding that we needed to connect the farmers with our communities, because many of these communities, Bayview that I initially worked with, didn't have any access to these farmers. So we had a farm to school program where we brought black farmers into Charles Drew. We worked heavily with Charles Drew. And then I was in San Francisco at the time, but eventually I moved to Oakland, and then I started getting involved in the Oakland food policy scene, started working in college and community centers. We did a mentorship with Frick Middle School with a young seventh or eighth grader, Guy Medina, and closely with us with that. And then we got a request from a guy that had a restaurant called Brother's Kitchen. He wanted to do a farmer's market. So he was one of my mentors who came to me. I went to Fresno to meet with the Black Farmers Association of California. I told them what the community wanted. And so in 2013, we started the Freedom Farmers Market in Oakland because there was no fresh food there. You know, there was no real attention to the needs of folks in what they call the bottom. So we started that, and then one thing, you know, we continue to grow, and so we continue to evolve and are working directly with black farmers. We're working with schools. We have the farmers market for 5 years. Now we have a pretty big community supported agriculture program where people can pick up or we can deliver, you know, get produce from black farmers. And so our next goal is we're looking to get a refrigerated van so we can pick up the produce from farmers. It can have a greater shelf life. But our work is really about doing the work so that black farmers keep their land. We can educate the next generation of black farmers. We can have some sovereignty over our food, over our community.
Right.
You know, we can decolonize this food system so that we are in control of it. It just takes coordination and the thoughtfulness around it. So, you know, I could say more, but I want to save time for some other things. But that's how we got started in Farms to Grow. Right now, CSA, we have a farmer development program where we work directly with farmers, help them write grants. I was on the phone earlier today with some farmers in Alabama that want to begin to collaborate. They got three different farms. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. we are on the ground, as you said once in a conversation, boots on the ground. That's our work.
Yes, ma'am.
And we're excited
yes, ma'am.
About it. And I don't want to go too far, too, speaking of the next generation. I'm not sure if you all, if your listeners know about the 1890 National Scholars Program. It's a collaboration with the USDA and 1890. It provides 4 years full tuition, room and board, books, everything at certain 1890s, Alabama A&M, Alcorn, Central, Delaware State, FAMU, Fort Valley, Kentucky State, Lincoln, North Carolina, A&T, Prairie Valley, South Carolina State, Southern, Tennessee State, Tuskegee, University of Arkansas, University of Maryland, Eastern Shore, Virginia State, and West Virginia State. So each one of these schools, if you want to go into agriculture or something related to environmental studies, engineering, veterinarian, you get a four-year scholarship. We have been pushing for this, and finally the USDA has really stepped up. I think this program has been around for about 4 or 5 years. The application
wow.
deadline is January 31st of each year, and it also comes with employment during the summer at a USDA place. Pay, so you get experience and you get paid. So just want to make sure everybody knows about that.
Yes,
and
ma'am, Gail, and that's a lot of information. So if you can, when it's convenient, if you can pass that information on to me, and then we can just
yes.
post it where, you know, those that are interested
okay.
in it. But, yes, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
And let's go ahead, if we can, and bring Sister Melva in the conversation, because I know you all have done quite a bit together over the years, and especially in that program, you know, at Charles Drew. And I remember Whitney Young Circle, Whitney Young, yes. So let's go ahead and bring
yes.
Sister Melva in. Can you hear Sister Melva?
Yes, I can. Peace
all
and
righty.
Blessings, family.
Peace and blessings.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, I have been with Gail for, oh, gosh, Gail, the first time I met you, I was at, we were at the state building in Sacramento.
Yes, at the Capitol. Mm-hmm.
At the Capitol. And that's where we met all the black farmers.
Yes.
And from there, we have been with each other ever since, from schools to school to Head Start, cooking programs, gardening programs. And each one was a program that helped children learn healthy eating, where food comes from, and then from there they could take it home and help their parents become better shoppers, cookers, just introduce new healthier eating to their family. But it first came from the children. That's what we were doing. It was from the soil to the table.
Yes.
And from that, we have, oh goodness, what didn't we do?
And how many children, Sister Melva, how many children would you say in the program you and Sister Gail were doing in the schools, the after school programs, how many children would you all say over that time that you all were involved with on a regular basis or that you, you know, had some sort of effect on, you know, their direction and their interest, would you say?
Let's see. We worked with Charles Drew. And there was, if I'm not mistaken, three third grade classes, fourth grade classes, and fifth grade classes. over 150 class students at that school, you know. And at Whitney Young, that was something different because it was a bunch of them. It was different levels. And it went out into the community, you know. Yes. So it was us being able to hand down tools that were given to us from and I'll say it, bloodline banking. And in bloodline banking, each one of us come from a village. And in that village, somewhere down that line, we had somebody that farmed. And what we were doing was handing it back down, reawakening the part of the I can't think of what the word is, that was sleep, and helping it being awakened and making it fun. That was one of the things that we had to do. We had to make it fun, because in making it fun, you wound up. Yes, instead of teaching and it sticking to just 10 people, it stuck to 30 of the children. It's like giving gifts and they don't know it's a gift. They don't even know it's a gift.
Yes.
He said, the minister said, learning should be fun. It should be fun. There should be some enjoyment in the acquisition and the gaining of knowledge. Because, I mean, if it's just arduous, how many of us are going to stick to it?
Yeah.
And you won't. You won't.
Mia came up. Yeah, you remember that song you came up with about teaching them how the seed grows? I have pictures of you bending down and they're talking about the sun, and then they raise their hands to the sky. And that was the preschool. That we were working for. We were working with 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds at the Hunters Point pre-K. And they were so excited at the activities, really explaining to them how food grows by experiencing in their body what a seed goes through.
Yes.
And I think we definitely have hundreds of students, at least over 300 in the course of the 3 years in the schools and the other events that we had, bringing in parents.
Yes.
So how do you go about making those kinds of programs, you know, part of the school curriculum? I know that was an after-school activity, but, you know, how do you go about making those kind of programs? Because they're so necessary. You know, how are children going to learn about agriculture and the importance of food and the growing of their own food if they're not being taught that somewhere?
Well, I can tell you this. Gail had the program. Had the program, and I just came and just brought just a small portion that I had.
A small portion, your wisdom and knowledge. But, Majid, if I might answer that and try to offer something, it takes the leadership of the school. We have the principal supporting us. And we had other school principals. It was a Malcolm X school wanting us. We were doing some programs over there. It really takes, I think, Black people in positions of leadership really wanting the experiences of other people coming in. You know, the school system is only able to provide so much education. They're limited in funding, and it's the role of community members. It's the role of nonprofits, community centers to go in and provide the education. So that's our mission. You know, the mission of our nonprofit is education. And we just happen to have been asked at the request of Ms. Rice Mitchell, the principal of Charles Drew, for the Young Chefs program. But, you know, once we decided we wanted to do the Gardens to Grow program, we contacted several schools, several after-school programs, and the three that we ended up working with were the three that said, yes, we want you. So it really takes the community arms to this kind of education opportunity and training. That's really, at the end of the day, is leaders that can open these opportunities for their students and their parents.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So while we're talking about building communities and making them safe and decent places to live, like you said, we have to want more, and then we have to advocate for more in those areas where, like you said, people are in positions of authority. But first, it has to start with us wanting more for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
That's it in the nutshell.
Now, your program, and we're talking about the children and, you know, their inspiration and excitement about the programs, and you all have, I believe you all have one of your, well, I don't believe, I know, you all have one of your former students as our special guest. If you want to go ahead, the both of you, if you want to go ahead and introduce that special guest that we have on board.
This is my 17-year-old granddaughter, Shawnee Mayfield, Majida's great-niece, Dr. Meyer's student from Farms to Grow School Gardening and Junior Chef Program, now college-bound to Fisk U in Ag. Now, as an excellent student, one of the things that I was very pleased to read in something she wrote was about the respect for the farmers, believing that having working and teaching of land is the future of her children, family, and community, and how land is the key to providing for ourselves, family, and is a magical thing that all of us can do. And this is Shawnee. You have anything to say, Gail?
No, I'm just I'm speechless, as you can see, around, you know, you never know, you know, the effect of the work, the impact of the work.
Right,
and I had lost touch with Shawnee and other students, and now I wonder how some of those other students are working, because when I first started working with students, I think around Shawnee's age, they were in kindergarten. We did a summer thing where we were bringing in the Black farmers. And so I've seen those kids from pre-K and obviously now to graduation, and it's just a blessing to be able to be a part of the development of their mind, body, and soul, and connection to the land. And I'm just honored that Shawnee is, and I know everybody's proud that she's going to be going to agriculture. And this is a result of all of our investment, and I'm happy to know that you're, you know, and we will support you in every way we can that you're going into the food and ag field.
Thank you. Thank you, Gardner Gail. That's why I know you by Gardner Gail. Like,
right.
I've been so blessed because not everybody comes from a family of farmers, and a lot of it comes from our history being whitewashed, watered down, and manipulated by the white man. So, you know, we can't always retrace our roots back to what our ancestors did, because without farming, we probably wouldn't be here right now. And that's what they had to do in order to survive. So it's such valuable just to know how to do that, just know how to provide for yourself and for your family. And if a lot of the people in our community, because they view as Black and brown, if they knew that their ancestors were farming, like we came from this, they'd they'd probably be more into it. If we had more farmers that looked like us out there, they'd probably be more into it. When you start with the children, because, you know, the children are the world, and they are the future, that goes back to the family, like you guys said before. Like when we were doing the gardening classes, oh, I was just so excited. And, you know, not everybody takes that information in, but it was just like, oh, yeah, we're making tomatoes, we got onions, you know, we just planting everything. I can bring this back to my mom. And, you know, we love to cook, too, so it's just great knowing exactly where our stuff is coming from. You know, it's fresh. You can, right. You're right, Nanny. You're definitely right. And, yes, and that really brings us together here. That definitely connects me a lot to my grandmother because we're just, like, in the garden, and she wants us to know this information. We started off early in the garden, oiled down, covered from head to toe, in the garden. Yeah, it was a few complaints just because, you know, we're young and we're not really understanding the benefits and the purpose of this. But as we get older, and she's never going to steer me in the wrong direction, never. So.
That's right.
Right, exactly. And it's like that passed right on down to me. Her knowledge passed down to me, and I say it a lot. Like, in school, I was just like, it's dingy over here. Throw a garden on top, you know? Like, add some flowers, some tomatoes or something. You know, it's just always something that can be done. And when you look at communities like the Bayview that have been impacted, like, you know, a lot of, like, the shipyards, the toxic air, all of that, that could really bring some more change to the community. It seems like we wait for, you know, the white man to come in and make changes for us, but that's not going to get us ahead. We have to do that for ourselves because at the end of the day, we have ourselves. We can't rely and depend on them. So, and we don't have, like, a lot of fresh fruit, fresh produce, farmers markets and stuff like that in Bayview anymore, and it's disappointing, but you have to think, like, not everybody has that knowledge either, and not everybody also has the support and the resources. Hence why I said farmers should be compensated what they deserve because they're feeding an ungrateful world that does not appreciate them. And, I don't know. It's just really just heartbreaking. These people work so hard. You know, my family works so hard. And, you know, they don't get the type of support or, you know, recognition that they deserve. Even though you guys are not asking for that at all, but we need people to see you guys. We need people to know that there's people that look like me and they're doing everything that people are telling me that I couldn't do. And that's how I feel when it really comes down to it because can't nobody tell me I'm not going to be nothing. Can't nobody tell me that the family that I come from is going to be anything. We've already been something. We're going somewhere very far. All I can do is take all the knowledge that I can while my elders are still here and share it. I can only pass it down. I can only give that information out to anybody who's going to sit there and listen and take it.
So thank you, Shani. Thank you, Sister Soldier,
yes.
Shani. Sister Farmer,
yes.
Soldier, Shani. praise be to Allah, praise be to Allah. So, you know, you said something, Shani, you said something that really struck me. You said you think more young people would be involved in this if they saw more farmers that look like them.
Yes, ma'am.
So, and we know that there's farmers out there that do look like them, you know, Mr. Will Scott and Scott Family Farms, you know, I mean, just to name a farmer, hardworking farmer. So is it that the farmers, do you think, is it that the farmers are not there, or do you think we're just not being taught at that early age in our family circles, in our community circles, about farmers and farming?
Yes, we're not really taught about that at a young age, because when you think about your parents' aspirations and hopes for you for the future, you know, I want you to be like a lawyer, I want you to be judges, I want you to really make change to the world. But what about farmers? That's a very vital position to have in this world right now. And it's there's a lot of farmers everywhere. And
now households are different.
Yes. And not, like I said, not all households even know, like, that, not all households know that history, if their family were farmers or not. So not a lot of people are going to, like, indulge into reading about it and, you know, like that. But I come from a family of farmers, so I'm already knowing how farming goes. I already know how it got treated, everything. I know all about it, and it's all connected. You can't get medicine without farming. You can't get stuff like bread and stuff without farming. You know, I can't have a call. It's like,
so you're talking about the recognition and the support and actually the value that's placed on farmers. How we, you know, we eat and we love to eat, and we want food to be there when we want food to be there. But we're not really looking at that from the seed.
Yes, ma'am.
We're just looking at it from the supermarket.
Acknowledging farmers either, like the mayor, like y'all have to get more involved. Y'all gonna be involved with the kids. Y'all gonna be involved with the politicians and all of that stuff like that. You have to be involved with the people that y'all consider the lowest of the low. I do have quotation marks when I say the lowest of the low. Like, they're very vital. You don't think it's vital and it's important for your child to know how a flower grows, to, like, fruit. They eat fruit. Like, they need to know where it comes from. They eat vegetables. They need to know where it comes from. If, like, when I was younger, looking at vegetables and looking at fruits, it was a lot different from how other kids are looking at fruits and vegetables. I was looking at it like it took 3 months for this to grow, the seed took how much water, took how much sunlight, like the whole logistics of it. They just thinking, oh, it came from the grocery store. Like, it came from somebody that planted it. It came from somebody that had to take, like, you know, their time and patience on watching it grow. They had to get down on their hands and knees and take it out. But you wouldn't know
ma'am.
All of that.
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
that
ma'am. You're talking about when you make that comparison, and you know you have an opportunity just to see. I know you said you were blessed. You're very blessed. So when you're able to make that comparison and having that knowledge, you know it fortifies what you just said. And then what can you do to help others? Let me take a moment if I can to see if we have any callers with any questions or comments. If they can go ahead and press that one, they can be added to the conversation. Go ahead and press the one to be added to the conversation if we have any listeners that have a question or a comment. So let me ask, we're talking about, was there something else you wanted to say before I go on, Shawnee?
No, ma'am.
Maybe later. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, Dr. Myers, Sister Melba, anything else you all want to talk about? Gil, if you can, just take a few minutes to let us know what's going on with the project you're working with, the Gullah Geechee and the land ownership there, if you will.
Yes, absolutely. For the last 3 years, I have been involved closely with the Gullah Geechee projects that are, I'm not sure if folks are familiar with the Gullah Geechee community. Actually, my father's side was Geechee, and from the Wilmington, North Carolina, all the way to Jacksonville, Florida, along the coast, is called the Gullah Geechee Corridor. It's a very isolated community because it's mostly on the waterways, and a lot of those cities mm-hmm. and those towns don't even have boats. I mean, have bridges. You can only get a boat or a ferry to get across, and they like not having bridges. But these are farmers that have had their land for over 150 years, and it has been, you know, prized. It's now prized land, but at one point you couldn't even navigate it. But now you have developers coming in, stealing this land. And why the Gullah Geechee community is so important, because this is the closest community that we have in the U.S. that practices Central and West African agriculture. A lot of the language is still intact. A lot of the basket weaving, the net making, many of the traditions that the respect for nature and the ways in which, you know, we prayed in the woods, those traditions are being maintained. And why they're so important, and I call the Gullah Geechee community our Black agrarian royalty, is because they know how to take care of the land with very little. So the land needs regenerating. They know how to do it. You know, they don't take all of the natural resources. They work within the natural resources. They're able to hunt, fish, grow food without disturbing the natural environment. It's amazing. I visited a Gullah farmer in South Carolina, a barefoot farmer, in 2012 when I was doing these interviews. And he showed me his farm, and I'm walking around. I'm saying, well, where's the food? He said, oh, just look down. I'm looking down. There's watermelon. And, you know, over there is okra. It's like a integrated forest, what looks like things that could be weeds. It's actually food. And so the Gullah Geechee community has maintained those same ways of sustainable farming, regenerative farming, and love of the land. And these are the farmers that are losing their land. So I co-authored a chapter in the Land Justice Reimagining Land, Food, and the Commons book. And so we have three chapters that really talk about the importance of keeping Gullah Geechee for just, you know, for a number of reasons, for keeping other Black farmers on the land. But the Gullah Geechee community is one of our last, you know, of course, when the Europeans went over, the colonizers went over to West Africa and brought back Senegambians who were experts in growing rice, after the South Carolina enslavement and Civil War period, and that many of those people occupied those plantations and bought that land and bit by bit built up communities, very, you know, stable communities for generations, and maintained the same farming practices, many of the same ways. They have a praise house, and it's amazing. So we wrote that book as a way for if they needed to go to court and we needed some expert witnesses, it would be some evidence in that book. But we're working, you know. And
what's
right
the
now
name of that again, Gail? What's the name of the book again, Gail?
It's Land Justice, Reimagining Land, Food, and the Commons. And we have three chapters in there on the Black agrarianism section. But with regard to supporting the Gullah Geechee, there is you know, there is the Gullah Geechee Nation, and you can do a search, basically, and they may be looking for donations and volunteers to help, legal help. But I was working with Reginald Hall of the Sapelo Island community, and I'm not sure if you may know that Bilal Muhammad was one of the very earliest men that had his family on. Well, when they took him from Africa, West Africa, he had so much power that he was able to direct basically what he wanted. So he after the enslavement period, his family built up a lot of Sapelo Island, and a lot of the descendants are the descendants of Bilal Muhammad. He was one of the most learned men in the U.S. He had written so many books by the time he came here. So he was so wise. They couldn't do anything but just honor his wisdom. But his family still now have land in Sapelo Island. They're fighting for it. But I would look up the Sapelo Island support, Gullah Geechee. Look up Bilal Muhammad, his family. They're still, most of the descendants on Sapelo are from Bilal Muhammad's siblings, I mean, offspring.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for that, Gail. We have callers that want to join our call. Hold on 1 second.
Caller with the last digit is 1964. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Pamelia from Louisville.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Pamelia. How are you, ma'am?
Fine, sister. How you doing? I just want to say I'm enjoying the show very much. I'm just really excited about the show. And the sister, was that Shani or Shonda, your niece?
Shani.
Shana?
Shani.
Shani. I am ma'am. I'm so proud of you. I don't know you personally, but I know your grandmother and your aunt, and I know they're beaming, and I'm just so proud of what you're saying and wish the best for you to continue on. You just give me hope knowing that there's someone young that is really excited about this field, and the way you speak is so encouraging, and I'm just so happy for you, and keep going. And I have a four-year-old granddaughter who stays with us 5 days a week, and she is so excited every time. We don't have a farm, but we have a large garden. And every time we go out, it's practically every day unless it's raining, she beats us out. She has her boots on. So I hope that she can continue to be enthusiastic as far as gardening and farming like you are. And I'm really enjoying everything that you're saying. I just want to say blessings to you and keep at it. And as I said, I don't know you, but I'm so very proud of you. And stay strong.
Thank
sister.
You so much. Oh my God. That really brought a big smile on my face because the youth are the future and we gotta start them young. So
yes,
when they get old they are gonna pass down enough knowledge on to the future generations, and that's what I hope to do.
Yes, ma'am. Well keep that. Yes, ma'am, and you take care and be safe. Assalamu alaikum.
You too, Rachel Salam.
Yes, ma'am.
Our next caller is just like Dr. Ridgely. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Ridgely.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
Great program, great guest, great student. Sister Shani, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Do you have a pen and pencil? A pen and a paper?
Yes.
Or a pencil?
Yes.
I want you to write this down.
Yes.
I want you to write this down, and then I want you to go to your Google when you get off and look this up. All right?
Okay.
Write down
okay.
The Committee for Economic Development, 1962, Adaptive Approach, ADAPTIVE, Adaptive Approach.
Okay,
I want you to look that up.
I will.
Because it's great that your grandmother and the people around her introduce you to agriculture, to gardening. We as black people were brought over here to farm for white people.
Right.
After slavery, we took that up and we bought 16 million acres of land. We were never given 40 acres in a mule. Now we're out of farming for the most part. And it's not because we were stupid, lazy. It was because the U.S. government put a plan together to take us out of farming forever. in that Committee for Economic Development Adaptive Approach, it was in 1962, they laid out a plan to get the people off the land into the cities. And one of the first things they did, I know you all talk about, well, we got after-school programs dealing with gardening and farming. Why don't we put this a part of the curriculum? It used to be a part of the curriculum in the rural areas in particular. But they decided in 1962 to remove vocational agriculture out of the schools. Not only did they remove vocational agriculture out of the schools, out of the high schools, they also gave scholarships to the children of farmers to go to college, full scholarships to go to college and study anything but agriculture.
Right.
I want you to hear what I just said. They went and gave scholarships to farm children, to the children of farmers, to study anything but agriculture so that they would never come back to the farm.
They cut
the connection between the parents and the children, whereas the parents would naturally grow their children into being farmers. They cut that and gave scholarships to the children to study anything except agriculture. So the fact that our young people don't know farmers, the fact that our young people don't know anything about agriculture, it was a systematic plan that has worked.
That was a setup. Yeah,
so
setup.
Now we are working against the plan. And Minister Farrakhan in 2013 at Tuskegee really started pushing agriculture at these black land-grant colleges. And when you go to Fisk, do not expect that they're going to teach you how to farm. They don't do that no more. There's only one school that does it, and it's Abraham Baldwin Agricultural College here in Tifton, Georgia. No other school in the country teaches farming anymore. They teach you, and they will give you jobs in the summer to work for Monsanto or the U.S. Department of Agriculture or something like that, or Extension Service, but it will not be on a farm. So while you in at Fisk, you need to go around and try to find you a farm family that you can go and visit every now and then to volunteer, or maybe they hire you, so you can really see what farming is all about, because they do not teach that at the colleges anymore. If they still have a farm, it is a research farm where the professors give grants to do research on special grant research, but they don't grow food for people. They don't grow food for people to buy, to sell, or nothing like that. It's just for experimental purposes. To learn farming, you're going to have to meet up with a farmer close to you, around Fisk, that you can visit, until one day you may be able to go to a school. But there's only one. And I know that sounds crazy, but it is true. It's only one. That's down here. And I talked to a professor who got his master's PhD from Cornell University in agronomy. And all the time he was in master's and PhD program, he never stepped foot on a tractor.
Wow.
Now, you know, a tractor pulls plows through the ground. Agronomy is the study of the soil. He never was on a tractor to see how the plow went through the ground.
Wow.
That's how disconnected the present educational system is to real farming. They don't want people to know how to farm because they intend to feed people fake meat and GMO.
Mm-hmm. You're definitely right about that.
So, look up Committee for Economic Development, 1962, Adaptive Approach, and study why we're in the system that we're in now, because it was purposely done. But great work. Y'all keep moving forward, pushing forward, and always look for a way to meet somebody who's actually farming and not some some college professor who never farmed. Just talking, somebody taught him. All right, thank you very much, Osmond.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Ridgely, for that. Thank you. You got? Did you get that, Shawnee?
She has it.
I have it.
She has
I
it.
I have.
Okay, we're down to the last few minutes. Do we have any other callers? Or okay, so the board is clear, and we're down to the last few minutes. Do any of you want to have any closing comments at this time?
I think I do.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Well, first, I just wanted to start up saying thank you. Thank you to you, Nanny. Thank you to you, Gardner Gill, and thank you to you, Auntie, because everything that you guys do is all connected. It's all connected, and it's all knowledge, knowledge that I'll take with me forever and ever, and that I'll continue to learn and continue to, you know, get better at. So when I pass it down, I know I'm passing down the right information. So I just want to say thank you guys first. And I also want to say that we do need more programs like the ones that you guys did when I was in third grade. We need more of that. And not even just the younger kids, teenagers too. If we had a farming program at my high school, high school would have been a lot easier for me. I can just taste it, but it's just valuable that, you know, you guys reach out to all communities, all children, no matter the ages, even the adults as well, because, you know, a lot of them didn't even have that information growing up. So it's better to have it than to not have it at all, like, no matter what point you get it at. And I want you guys to keep up the work. I'm going to hopefully be, you know, the one that takes what you guys do and pass it on down to the younger generation. So you guys are my teachers, and you guys are teaching pretty darn well over there, and I'm loving it. I want you guys to continue doing it. I love seeing all of y'all strong black women just proving,
that's right,
like, everything. Like, and y'all just amazing. I'm so proud to be a part of this family. I'm so proud to, you know. Let me just say that, because when I was in third grade and Gardner, Gail, my nanny came, I was so excited. I'm like, it's my nanny. I know her.
Like, those are mine, right? Those are mine.
She is bomb. I'm like, y'all don't know Gardner, Gail? I'm like, she is awesome. I'm just like, yeah, I'm like, pump y'all up. I'm like, hyping y'all up. I'm like, yes, they're amazing. I still do that to this day because I'm like, that program really, like, put a lot of stuff in perspective for me. And I really love it. I loved it. I would do it again in a heartbeat. I put my children in it. Everything. That was just awesome. So keep doing that. Keep showing the community that, you know, you're here. Yes, y'all love them. You know, we all together at the end of the day.
That's right. That's right.
Definitely.
That's right. We're all
thank
we have.
Family.
We are all
that's
we
right.
have. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Goodness. Don't make somebody
we're
cry.
We're down to our last 90 seconds. I know. My eyes are wet as well. You know what, Johnny? You know what?
That's people cry.
I would just say thank you for taking the baton willingly, you know, happily, and we're going to be with you, help you, support you, and we're going to see what your role is going to be now, you know, because
yes.
now it's your time. It's your time to teach and train as well. So
yes.
we're excited. We're excited. That's what it's about. We're excited and we're connected. We're out of time. Sisters, I just want to say thank you so much. I love you all, and we're going to have
you.
To do this again.
Yes.
Yes. Love you guys.
And blessing.
I love you guys
love
so
much. You, Johnny. Love you, Mia.
Love you, Gail.
Oh,
okay, Vegeta.
Love you all. Take care.
Thank you.
Out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone.
Hello.
I never read one. my ears are so young. Go back to when you came. My family tree, my family name. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs.